once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else, close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of the second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach on this October 28th, Saturday, in the year of our Lord, 2017. And you're certainly welcome to give us a call in here about with questions or comments about anything to do with the economy or investing or things of that ilk. It's kind of boring right now. People rocking along, getting high returns out of their investments. But you can call and talk to us about this boring stuff anytime. 254-773-1400.
Yeah, we've got some other stuff that we can talk about that is economically related, but also political in nature, which is always the touchy stuff. It's really hard to make predictions when you got to deal with Congress. All we can do is work with what they have provided so far. But are you familiar with what happened on Thursday?
The sun came up?
Yeah, I did. And it was either that or the world was turning. We could have a debate on that, okay, if you'd like.
What significant? I mean, I know a lot of things that happened on Thursday. I got up. I walked to work.
The House passed the Senate version of the budget resolution.
Oh, yeah. That was, yeah, absolutely.
There's something fundamentally important about this,
which is
budget.
$1.5 trillion.
Right. Well, there's something fundamentally important here. What happens there is they set out some guidelines in the budget resolution that has to do with a lot of things. And in the original House version, there was a great insistence on making it
revenue neutral.
Revenue neutral. We're not going to lower or raise revenue by making changes in the coming year.
So we would stick with only a $500 billion deficit each year.
Right, right. So revenue neutral means that we are still going into significant debt each year. But revenue neutral means that we're not going to go into more debt than we already were planned. Then it went to the Senate. And the Senate, in any kind of budget resolution, the Senate comes up with its own version. And they usually have a sit-down meeting where they combine the two or go with one or the other. Mm-hmm. In this case, they went with the Senate version, and the House passed that on Thursday. The Senate had passed it earlier in the week. So here's the thing. The Senate version is laying the groundwork for the tax reform without needing Democrat votes to do it. Tax reform in this case isn't really just tax reform. It's really tax lowering. And people that have listened to us, I've gotten some feedback from that. They're, you know, kind of shaking their fists at us for saying it's a bad idea to cut taxes. It means we would not get elected. If we were saying raise taxes, don't cut it, we wouldn't get elected. And what's going on here is the groundwork's being laid for a tax cut. And the Democrats may want to make this sound like a tax cut for the rich, but it really, what the debate is right now, everything that we can see is a tax cut for everyone.
Basically, it's just we're going to raise spending and cut revenue to the United States government and see what happens.
Right. And from a personal perspective, even from a professional, what I do for my clients' perspective, that makes me giddy happy. When it comes to the scholarship side of things, when we look at, well, what are the long-term implications of this sudden pay raise going out to everyone? Well, short-term implications are fantastic. We may see some inflation start jumping into the world here, but a lot of people will have a lot more money than they do right now. Long-term, our debt is going to skyrocket. There's just, you know, if we were doing this at the bottom of a recession, what that would do was it would create a huge amount of employment. It would cause businesses to start hiring and investing in new equipment. The problem with that today is that we're not at the bottom of a recession. We are probably beyond full employment. We're at a place where people are just not available in large numbers to come to be hired.
One of the big issues that the Republicans are facing, and it's a hard one, is they have agreed in the budget resolution, and they've agreed across the board, to increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years by their calculations. Now, some other firms, some other organizations have come up and said, hey, their plan is for a lot more than that. But let's just use the $1.5 trillion. But in order to get to the one with the tax cuts that are being proposed, in order to get to the $1.5 trillion reduction, they have got to find not only they said, here's where we want to cut taxes. You know, here's the rates we want to cut to, and here's 20% on corporations. They got to find a source of revenue, or they have to close an existing tax deduction. And the one that Kevin Brady has been talking about, who is the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, he's the guy, he's from Texas. He is the guy.
Conservative guy.
And he has said, hey, 401ks are still on the table. Cut 401k deductions to $2,500. Currently, it's $18,000 a year unless you're over 50 and trying to do catch-up, in which case it gets higher, up to about $25,000 a year. $23,000 a year. Well, there's other things you can throw in there.
I don't think the 18's right either, but we've got to look at
anyway,
all.
Anyway, but the point is that 401k, if you got a 401k at work, what Kevin Brady has proposed to close the gap to get it only to a $1.5 trillion extra deficit. Everything they've come up with that they have proposed, by the way, is creating some problems.
Yeah, this is important. There's a key to this whole tax thing. This is probably not the exciting conversation people expect, a tax conversation. The key to the whole tax concept that's on the table right now is that there's going to be a more than doubling of the standard deduction. By more than doubling, I mean there's going to be some other stuff for child credits and stuff that gets added in there. So that, in effect, most of the people that are doing their deductions itemized, that are going through and saying the mortgage interest is deducted or the payments to student loans being deducted, interest on student loans being deducted, all that stuff that happens on a separate sheet of paper, it's happening because the standard deduction doesn't cover enough. So you've got enough expenses that are beyond that you would go ahead and use it. And about 40% of the United States right now uses the itemized deduction. That means that 60% of the taxpayers use the standard. At the end of this, if they keep that standard deduction doubled, about 95% of the people won't care about their mortgage interest deduction anymore because they won't get to take it because the standard deduction is bigger. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so the 401k deduction is something that isn't part of that itemized deduction area. And that's something that's really clear. If they're saying the standard deduction is where everybody's going to get the savings, and then they take away some of your ability to put into an IRA or into a 401k, then they're really hurting us in other places, too. It makes it a lot less palatable.
To give you some idea what that means, I just right now, for 2017, not 2018, they're going to raise it in 2018. You can have up to $18,000 of your compensation placed in, and there's a percentage limit, too. Mm-hmm. In a 401k account, there's a $6,000 catch up for age 50 and older. But
it goes up to $24,000.
If the employer is matching, the contribution limit is $54,000. So conceivably, a person could get $54,000 of tax deferred income, not have to pay taxes on issue. Now, they would have to pay taxes when they take the money out in the future. And that's a big thing to a lot of people. What Kevin Brady, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, the guy who does this stuff, has said is we'll just limit that instead of $54,000, we'll make it $2,500. And you can do the same amount, it's just that you won't get a tax deduction for it, but it'll be in a Roth, which means you won't be able to collect the taxes in the future, but you don't get a tax deduction today, so the United States government doesn't lose its revenue. The president, of course, tweeted that that ain't going to happen. But here's the point. Every time the House comes up, Ways and Means Committee specifically, comes up with a way to pay for the tax deductions, I say pay, meaning get further revenue like the border adjustment tax or losing the mortgage deduction, or losing state tax. If you have right now, for instance, in the state of Texas, if you keep up with your sales tax, you can make a deduction based on your receipts, or you can make a deduction based on just a number that they hand you and say, this is your, based on your income, this is probably what you paid in sales taxes.
Right.
That will, under the proposal that's in the House Ways and Means Committee, that goes away. Well,
the thing is that that's one of the things on the table. If the, mm-hmm. the state and local taxes, that means your property taxes.
Well, now the property taxes, the House Ways and Means Committee have left the property taxes and the mortgage deduction in place for individuals.
They have them on the table. So the latest one is, let's leave these in place and take away the 401k. But basically what they're doing is they're moving pieces around on the board.
But they got to do something.
They got to figure out where is it that we're going to make the cuts and where are we going to not lose too much revenue. The important part is that the Ways and Means have been talking using the House's version of the budget resolution, which was the concept of revenue neutral. We're not going to lose or gain. Well, the Senate version says you don't have to.
I'm saying the discussions that I'm referring to in the Ways and Means Committee now are assuming the $1.5 trillion increase, which was the Senate version. But even with the $1.5 trillion increase in the deficit, somewhere, somebody's sacred cow will have to get gored, and gored in a major fashion, or it will not, the deficit would soar into the stratosphere. Now, I think there's enough momentum in the tax cut strategy right now, in the House and in the Senate and with the President, that we're going to get a tax cut. Do you think that's probably, I mean...
I think it's likely. It could stall again if no Democrats get on board and they lose a couple of Republicans again. This could be the stall year
where they don't get anything.
But it's really hard to vote against a tax cut. It really is, even if the long-term implication is a lot of debt.
Here is this is not investment advice. It's just something to think about. Here is an effective strategy. If you assume that next year we're going to get a tax cut, and by the way, there does seem to be a public assumption as part of why the Consumer Confidence Index went up, we're going to see much higher deficits. We're going to see a tripling, very conservatively, a tripling in federal borrowing over the next 10 years. That will run interest rates up. That is what runs interest rates up and the price of bonds down.
By the way, when we say a tripling, we don't mean a tripling of the debt. We're talking about every year,
the annual borrowing, right?
The deficit borrowing, and then we've got to pay back that debt. And a lot of times, the way we pay it back is we issue new debt to pay the old debt.
In other words, right now, the federal deficit is running about $500 billion a year, $500 billion, a little more than that, 583, I think. And by 10 years from now, the very conservative numbers that they're working with, I say conservative because we assume no wars, no emergencies, no hurricanes, no recessions between now and then, is the federal government will be borrowing $1.5 trillion per year, which means they will be selling a lot of bonds. And when they're selling a lot of bonds, the price of bonds go down. Now, the good news is, and this is important, there's no question, Jake said it, a dramatic tax cut like the one the president has proposed and is being discussed in the House of Representatives and the Senate would do wonders for income and stock prices.
Yeah, and everybody's going to say, hey, I have a lot more money all of a sudden. There's a problem with that, and I get this sometimes. I've had some people talk to me this week. Hey, Jake, I thought you liked debt for the U.S. government. When we were talking about the debt problem, and I have to say what I said when we were talking about that, what you said when we were talking about that, at the bottom of the recession, when we were in 2009, we were in a place where it was really not good, where the unemployment rate was not at the peak yet, but it was rising rapidly.
Yeah, we got the double-digit unemployment at one point.
Right. We're looking at a really severe downturn in the economy. And people talked about, at that point, cutting spending and paying off the debt. Any person who understands the long-term concepts of what government's responsibilities are, it doesn't matter if you're talking about economists that have become champions for the left wing or the right wing. Milton Friedman and John Maynard Keynes both said the same thing. In recessions, the government should spend more. And when we're in good economic times, the government either should run a balanced budget, pay back debt, or if a surplus, gather some rainy day money, and then once the rainy day money's met, then you lower taxes. And that's both sides of what has become a political argument based on these two economists. These are the stalwart heads of economic schools that people point back to and said, well, he said, well, they were both in agreement. Government should spend more money when there's a recession. It should lower taxes in a recession. It should take on debt in a recession if it doesn't have rainy day funds. But you need to pay it back when things are going well. It doesn't feel good to pay it back, but that's the way you're supposed to do it. It's if you think it through and you say the government needs to be have the ability to support businesses when business is bad so that they can be there to provide the tax revenue when business is good. If we turn around and use the same mentality of don't cut spending, don't increase taxes when things are going well, we're not going to have anything for when things are not going well. And this is something that I think consumer confidence is a good indicator here. People just feel like we're past the recession, things are going well. We did it. Now we should reward ourselves. Well, we do need to reward ourselves, but long term, we also need to know that there's going to be another downturn. There always is another downturn. And when it happens, if we're not prepared for it, we've got to borrow again, or we're going to be having the same debate. Well, the debt's too high. Maybe we should pay it off now. We could do what Greece did and just cut everything and try paying back all the debt and cause the unemployment rate to still be in the double digits.
And I it's kind of like Puerto Rico thought their debt was manageable
until there was a recession,
until some things changed. And then on top of that, they had a natural disaster. And there's nothing, I don't know that there's anything we can do about what Congress is going to do. I think John Carter would probably vote for the tax cut, because if he doesn't vote for the tax cut,
it's a party thing.
Throw him out.
Yeah, it's a party thing. Nothing he puts forward will get passed if he doesn't follow the party line.
So the thing to do is to recognize, be aware of the fact that unlike the Federal Reserve spending in 2009 and the TARP and all of these things, none of those were budget busters. We have a debt of the United States, debt held by the public. It's debt that the United States actually has to pay back. They can't play around with it and stretch right. The Social Security age out and do things like that. Of about 77% of our gross domestic product. If the budget resolution that just passed and the plan that goes out for 10 years is put in place and everything works fine, and they find some way to get revenue replacement, so it's only a $1.5 trillion additional debt. Our debt in the United States, the federal government will owe 100% of GDP in 10 years. That's just presuming
getting
reasonable growth.
Zone.
That is the point where you start to tip over the edge, and 77% is reasonable and manageable. And in good times, we should be paying it back down towards 50. But once you get to 100, 10 years from now, if everything does not go perfectly from there forward, we're at risk. But here's what you can do about it, individual. As I said, we've had low interest rates for a long period of time. People are investing in bond funds like there's no tomorrow, literally.
Now, that's not a good idea when interest rates are as low as they've ever been or close.
And if you just think about it a moment, that's not to say that in the short term we're going to see wonderful things occur. It's not to say that in the short term this will work, but it makes sense. If we have a massive tax cut, business will become more profitable and people will have more money to spend. The combination of those two will cause earnings to rise and the stock market to rise and more people to buy into the stock market. If we have more money because the government is borrowing more money, it will cause bond prices to fall because there will be an oversupply of bonds. There will be higher interest rates. In which case, it's probably a good idea to lean more towards stocks than bonds, but don't take it too far. Don't go crazy.
Yeah. But do this according to your own safety guidelines,
right?
Or build them if you don't have them.
But maintain that reserve, because at some point in the next 10 years, I have a great deal of confidence, personal confidence, that we will have an unexpected event occur.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll
it'll be a crisis and it will be unpleasant.
A recession or something will happen that's unpleasant. That's, you know, people say, how do you guys know this stuff? Well, at what point in the history of mankind have we gone 10 years without some kind of something bad happening?
And we are
there are no times then that's happened.
We are turning the corner right now from recovery to expansion. And as long as we're in recovery and looking back at a horrific great recession and stock market panic, there's very little danger that either of those will happen again. But we're starting to turn away from that now. We're starting to turn towards everything's coming up roses and likely to continue to come up roses if that gets reinforced with a tax cut. Then I would expect we will see a runaway bull market, not terribly unlike that one that was triggered in the 1990s.
It leads to euphoria. And euphoria is dangerous in the market unless you're the one selling to the euphoric buyers.
And it can go on quite a while. We can go quite a few years. But
it's very much like the Bitcoin market right now. There is a euphoria in the Bitcoin. Most people that own Bitcoins don't even know what they own. Well, it's called a Bitcoin. Well, what is it? Well, it's like money. No, what is it? It's based in something. It really is. What is it based in? Most people can't tell you. Even people that own it, even people that have spent 4 to 10 digits buying Bitcoins, they don't know what they've purchased. That's scary. That's euphoria.
And I have recently read some very wise market prognosticators who have been correct through the years, warning, including BlackRock's chief and a lot of other people who really have a good grasp of what goes on in the markets.
And they agree with us, so they must
be right.
They're saying
that the biggest bubble out there right now is Bitcoin, and it is going to crash. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It's going to come crashing down horribly.
I'm hearing this from siblings. Should I get into Bitcoin? I'm hearing this from people that have
I hear it from
no,
people that don't know the difference between livestock and common stock.
They have trouble opening an email account, and they're saying, should I buy Bitcoin? That's a mania. That's like, should I buy an ostrich farm? For those of you that remember that, probably not. People are not going to spend $1,100 for an omelet.
They actually didn't want the farm. They just wanted to buy eggs.
Yeah, they buy the egg so that egg could grow up to grow more eggs so that they could sell the eggs at the same price they bought it to someone else or higher. Yeah. The problem, this is the greater fool theory at its best or worst, whatever you want to look at it. People are piling onto this without understanding what's driving the market at all. Not that that's unusual. People usually do not understand what's driving the reason why they buy.
Well, speaking of the reason why they buy, we need to probably run some commercials so that KTM can continue to buy electricity and things like that.
Yes.
And but you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you'd like to give us a call, 254-773-1400. If this is October 28th where you are, if it's just a few days before, when is officially Halloween?
I think this year it falls on the 31st.
I think it does too. And when does time change? Is it this weekend?
Is it fall?
Spring forward, fall back, but what is the date?
Good question.
But we're going to run commercials and give
we'll tell them on the other side.
I think it's coming up pretty quick.
November 5th.
No, what?
Yeah.
That's my birthday.
Yes, it is.
No, we can't have this happening. Trick or Treat is coming on November 5th this year.
Right.
Okay.
All right. We will be back on the other side. Again, if you want to join our silly conversation, 254-773-1400. We'll be back.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach on this October 28th, 2017. And you're welcome to give us a call at 254-773-1400. We do see some small signs of irrational exuberance going on out there.
Yeah, in the bond market.
No.
Definitely see it in the bond market. Well, see it in the Bitcoin market.
Well, I don't know that the bond market's irrational exuberance. It's just silliness. We've irrational
seen huge
exuberance
inflows into that market still.
Is after who is the guy with Steve Jobs? Wozniak. Wozniak said, my iPhone 7 was like my iPhone 8, which was like my iPhone. He said, in the 7 and 8, I can't tell the difference, so I'm not buying the X.
Right.
And when the X came out at roughly $1,000 to $1,200 a pop, plus tax, title, licensing, dealer preparation fees, FOB, wherever.
I think it's Seattle instead of Detroit.
Not only did their pre-orders sell out, they're warning people now there will be at least a one-month delay between the time you order and you get it. They had massive orders far beyond that which was expected. Why do you need to buy $1,200 worth of new telephone that looks just like your old telephone?
Because.
That's what I'm saying. This is irrational exuberance.
Well, there's another thing, and there's a conspiracy theory that say that the like Apple and Google and all they do something to your phone to make it slower over time. And have you noticed that your phone is slower than
yes.
when you bought it?
Yes.
The reason why it's slower isn't because it's gotten some update intentionally designed to slow it down. It's because every one of your apps that you use updates over time to be on par with a year-old phone, so that a year-old phone can run that software quickly. If your phone is 2 years old, you start to feel like you're running a little slow. You hit the app, it opens slowly, and you're like, that same app opened lightning speed just when I got this.
Don't know what you're talking about. Jacob.
Yeah, so it's no conspiracy. It's they're adding new content. They're adding new things to the apps. And if you only use a few apps, I don't use that many. One of the apps I use on my Android is a Kindle. Well, they've just updated the Kindle app, and it runs a little bit slower when you first open it up. Other than that, it's just doing exactly the same thing it was before. You're looking at screen print, and you just turn the page. So I'm not all that worried about getting a new phone, but if somebody's interested in playing the latest candy snorting or crushing of Pikachus or any of the other...
How about chasing invisible, mythical creatures around in the street?
Yes. Yeah. If somebody's interested in that, then within a year, if they don't have the latest phone, then they're going to be saying the Pikachu got away, or I was chasing an invisible thing, but my app crashed.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
I'm sorry. I had my radio on trying to listen, this, that, and the other. I have a question for you guys. First off, my name is... David Fuson. I live in Belton.
All right.
Hi, David.
And I enjoy listening to your show. I moved here a couple of years ago and just run across it, and I try to catch it every... I love the way you guys talk common sense. Let me get about my question. Like I said, I moved here just recently. I've been in the market since, I guess, 91. The first stock I bought was Walmart. And I've done reasonably well with that, but a few years ago, I decided I couldn't do my due diligence to own individual stocks, okay?
Right.
So I decided due mostly to the expense ratio, to go with Vanguard. And I got into a target fund based on my age, and you know how that goes.
Right, yeah.
Okay, and now that I'm in retirement, it automatically went over to a I guess it's called an income fund.
Right.
And actually, I've been sort of had a knot in my stomach here lately because the market's just going nuts. And I know it's, I've lived through a couple of crashes. Never sold any stocks, so I never really lost any money. But right now, and I was listening to you guys talk this morning about bonds, the fund I'm in now has me at 30% stock, and the rest of it is 70% is bonds and different instruments. Okay?
And that's kind of a that's kind of a standard rule of thumb issue, and frankly, we don't like it.
It's not a good time period for that and rule of thumb.
It's based on the reason they put these target funds together like this is based on a fundamental issue, and that is most of the data we have about the way markets behave has been recorded in the last 30 to 40 years. We have been, for the last 35 years, in a bull market in bonds. Therefore, there is this sense that bonds always rise in value because they have for 35 years. But bonds only rise in value when interest rates are coming down, and they have for 35 years. And if we make a reasonable assumption that the government's about to get into some serious borrowing while stimulating the economy, which will cause corporations to borrow more money, that's kind of a setup for the reverse to happen. And I'm very suspicious of target date funds for retirees right now.
Yeah, for retirees, we use target date funds when we're talking about college sometimes, because they're not so heavily weighted in bonds in a lot of it for a college target date fund. We're using some bad data on the target dates, and it's a difficult area because we like Vanguard, just as a side note. They're a fantastic company. They have very, very low fees. It means you're an owner of Vanguard by being part of it. They're in essence a co-op in that you own the fund, therefore you own part of Vanguard. But the issue here is that if you feel like you don't understand what you're invested in, because it's got, one, it was so complex before, and this is something we see regularly. People that have built complexity in their portfolios over their entire working life, and they finally come to a point where they want to sit back and relax, and they look at their portfolio is the most complex it's ever been. Right at the point that they don't want to spend any more time on it. Vanguard is a nice place to go to, but it's really hard to get questions answered. It's really hard to say, why is the target date fund put this way? Well, you can read the prospectus, and the prospectus says that over long periods of time, meaning 30 years instead of meaning 35 plus, bonds have held against fill in the blank. So understanding that history is longer than one generation is kind of a prerequisite to seeing the problem here.
I want to make a suggestion to you that you take a look, since you're in Vanguard. They have some funds that are not index funds, which you're not really in an index fund now anyway.
You're in a fund of funds.
They have some...
Sorry to interrupt you, but you hit me right smack on the head. Everything you've said has been exactly right. I got tired of doing my due diligence, blah, 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 and get that. I put it in there and not worry about it. And you're right.
Only now you're worried about it. Only now you're worried about it.
There's two approaches.
Since I listened to you guys, I'm starting to say, hey, wait just a minute here. I got 70% of nearly a $500,000 in bonds. And if it happens, what I think is going to happen, I can't see it not happening. I'm 72. I would hate just when I get the age to pass this on to my children to take a huge. So I guess I'm going to shut up now and let you finish your thought, and maybe you can give me an idea of what I'll do.
There's basically two ways to approach this, in my opinion, and one of which is self-serving to us, and I'm going to say I've got a conflict of interest. One is you find a qualified investment advisory firm that is not affiliated or associated with the broker-dealer that sells stuff. In other words, an independent fee-only investment advisory firm. There's a couple of them down in Austin. Obviously, that's what we do. If you have a sufficiently large portfolio that you want to live off of it, that's where you need to go. Alternatively, since you're at Vanguard, I will say that Vanguard has some funds, and you need to look them up yourself. I'm not going to tell you what they are.
Okay.
That are the ones that John Bogle is invested mainly in, and they are not index funds. They are funds that Vanguard has set up with a collection of different managers inside of them. They're basically like a portfolio, and they are conservatively managed. Vanguard doesn't know how to do anything else. And they are actively managed. And if you look at their historic return, they have done quite well, and they are very highly rated by Morningstar. Now, is that the ideal solution for everybody? No.
Absolutely not. Everybody doesn't fit in one size.
But they do have some pretty good product that is not a target date fund that I think if you're willing to recognize that in a market downturn, which is we're going to get market downturns.
At some point.
If you're willing to ride out market downturns, remember that stock market downturns historically are relatively short. They can be severe, but they're relatively short. We come back out and we go to town. This is what people are missing at this point is if you go back to the last time interest rates went up, which was about between 40 and 50 years ago, you will discover that if you're in a big bond portfolio and interest rates go up, you don't recover.
It's a sustained downturn unless you're able to hold all of the bonds to maturity and they don't fail in the process.
But if you're in mutual, if you hold individual bonds, then you've got individual issue risk and you've got to manage those and all this. But
you're in a fund, and that means the manager is going to do it.
And when you're in a fund, once interest rates start up historically, back there were some really good bond funds back in the 1960s. As we came off the gold standard and Richard Nixon did some really dumb things with the money supply, or encouraged some dumb things, and a lot of dumb things happened, and inflation took off and interest rates came up, the people who were in those bond funds, mutual funds, did not live long enough to recover what they lost. And that's not to say you should be completely out of bonds, short-term bonds. I think you should have a reserve in short-term bonds. But just be aware that your gut reaction with regard to interest rates and the risk that's in the market right now is, in my opinion, well-founded.
Well, you guys must have talked to me before and I didn't know it. That's exactly, I've not been feeling easy about this for a while. The market, I mean, it's just nuts. I don't see any reason for what's going on. I know that currency and we're being manipulated with the no interest. It's just not natural. And with my gut feeling, with just happening to listen to you guys this morning, it seemed like you were preaching directly at me. I mean, actually it did. And I'm thinking, you know, give those guys a call. You're located in Salado, correct?
Well, actually, that's where our office is. Yeah,
we're located in Temple because we're sitting in a studio.
We're sitting in the KTM studio in Temple, but
usually our office is located. Yeah,
during regular business days, we spend a lot of time sitting in a building in Salado.
Okay, let me ask you this question: if I were to, and I will go to Vanguard, and John Bogle's been my hero for many years after Warren Buffett, but. But the thing of it is, if I make an arrangement and bring my last statement I got from Vanguard down, do you have someone there, or will you guys, can I walk in there, make an appointment, and walk in there, and we can talk about something?
Yes, that's what we do. We're if you're a reasonable person and you have money that you're concerned about, we'll talk to you. Now, if you don't meet the criteria that we have and we don't think it's a good fit, we'll recommend someplace for you to go. That's not us.
But, right. And if we're not a good fit for you, you can recommend a place for us to go to.
Yeah. People do occasionally recommend places for us to go. Dark places. No. Somebody said I had my head in a dark place and I needed to go to a warm place or something like that. I don't know.
Well, I wish more people would stop acting so crazy and get their heads more in a conservative but reasonable place. I mean, you listen for many, many years. I listen to MSNBC and the New Paradigm and all this crap that went on for years and never bought into any of it. I at that time I owned 15 different companies, But I never did get into the dot-com stuff. I was in like the Intel and Seagate, and it went down. But I hung on, and I've done fairly well.
Good.
But like I say, the gut, and then just hearing you guys this morning, I'm thinking, man, it's like sitting in church and hearing the preacher talk about something. You're guilty. So.
Well, yeah.
It was like, you know, I know you know the jokes about that, but I'm thinking, holy cow, these guys. I tell you what, I got your number. I will look you up on the net and get your ad and your phone number, and I will call whenever I can get a chance and set it up and bring my financials all down there and it, with my cash and that number. It's well over 500,000. So I think I'll meet the criteria, and I'm pretty reasonable.
We'll see.
Anyway, that's enough about my telling about myself.
Great.
But last year I had to start. The government told me how much money I had to start taking out, and Vanguard set that up for me, and I got thing. So anyway,
well, one of the things people don't know about John Bogle, who love John Bogle, who preaches indexing, is one day. For just a few minutes, a number of years ago, inadvertently, the SEC released his holdings, and they pulled them back. But during that short period of time, that little snapshot we got of John Bogle's holdings, the vast majority of his money is not invested in index funds. It's invested in
actively managed funds
at Vanguard, which I think was hilarious. But that's neither here nor there.
I didn't realize. And every time I have a chance to listen. He's got to be 90 years old by now, right?
Yeah, he's 90-something, I think. He's doing okay for a guy.
I've always took his counsel, and okay. But anyway, listen, I'll get this together and make an appointment. You guys keep that normal hours just during the week, business hours?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
And we have real live people who answer the phone. I'll just tell you the number. It's 254-947-1111.
And John Bogle is 88 years old.
He's 88. Well, yeah. He looks like he's 98.
Oh, I know. Every time I see him, I think, my God, somebody must be holding him up or something. Yeah. Still kind of sharp, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is.
Brain's in good shape.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoy your show, and I will continue listening.
Thanks.
Have a great day, guys.
All right.
Bye.
You know, I don't know if he'd make a fit or not. He listens to this program.
Yeah, there's some marks against him already listening to two bald guys with beards in here.
Yeah,
I have to warn anybody that says they're going to come to the office that we don't look as good as we sound. Just sorry about that. We've got definitely made for radio faces.
And telephone number here remains 254-773-1400.
That's right.
There's an interesting thing going on. It's kind of quiet in the background. You haven't heard much about it, but hedge funds are kind of fizzling right now.
Kind of fizzling. Yes, the you don't get big press on them because they're doing it slowly and dissolving themselves. Fizzling's right. It's like they're dissolving slowly away into
they've started cutting prices. I don't know if you know about that, but they've started cutting their fees down to they've stopped taking the 20% of gains plus
The 2%. Plus, yeah, 2%. Now they're just at 2%. 2% is still a really high fee.
Yeah, it is. There's a very good reason for that. Over the last couple of years, the average hedge fund has dramatically underperformed the market. In some cases, the hedge funds lost money when the market was making money, and a lot of hedge funds are folding and sending the money back. What money is left back to the to their investors. And there's a reason for this. The reason is, as time goes by, there's always this opportunity, but we don't know where it is, for somebody who can get around the existing regulations to make a profit in a restricted area. But when the restricted area goes away and the inefficiency goes away, and it happens, it's one of the wonderful things about capitalism, is we have this tendency that whenever something is inefficient, there is a short period of time when you can jump into this inefficiency and make a lot of money, by the time it hits the papers and the news media that you can make a lot of money in this inefficiency, it's gone and it's overpriced.
Yeah, and it may go up for a little bit longer as everybody else is getting in on the inefficiency, but the market's really, really good at making an inefficiency into a way too efficient and going the other direction, inefficient on the wrong side.
Anybody that says they can either – that they can give you a better return or the same return with lower risk or a combination of the above, and we do that. The key is that you ask them a question, and it's a very good question. What inefficiency in the market are you exploiting that enables you to do this? And you look at the inefficiency and said, is that really there? And do a lot of people jump on it, and is it about to go away? Now, the one we exploit, I'll just tell you, there's a big inefficiency in the market. And it is that over a long period of time, people forget what happened. And so if you are long, that's why long-term value investors over a long period of time outperform other investors, generally speaking. Why? Well, because people forget that things are not worth more than they're worth. And people tend to get irrationally exuberant and irrationally stupid.
And they'll say, I'll pay a lot of money more than I ever thought I would pay for this fill-in-the-blank thing that I didn't realize was that valuable just a little while ago. And, of course, that's normal.
And so – but in order to capture that gain, you have to stay – the whole issue is if your time horizon is longer and you do your research – you will probably do better than a person whose time horizon is shorter, but only over a longer period of time, which means you have to be patient.
Yeah.
And you have to say, okay, the world is taking off. The 1990s, I will remember, the stock market took off and people came in and they wanted bigger returns. And anybody that I turned down and said, no, we don't want to get too aggressive in the late 1990s, I lost them as clients.
Another piece of news, and I'm changing the subject now, but it's an area that we've been covering to some extent. It has to do with oil, and it has to do with Venezuela. Venezuela made a debt payment, a bond payment.
Cool.
They did it, $841 million. There was some doubt as to whether or not they would be able to put the money together to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty important for the entire nation because the number one revenue producer for the nation, where it gets most of its tax revenue, where it gets most of the stuff that it's been able to give to its citizens just for existing, comes from Citgo. And if they hadn't made this debt payment, 51% ownership of Citgo would have gone to American bondholders. They would have lost control of their state-owned oil company. And now, in the past, all they would have done is just nationalize it again. But at this point, they need money in order to make it. That means they need the assets associated with that oil company in order to get more bonds so that they can make it through this era of low-cost oil. That's kind of a weird situation. It's in our hemisphere, and we're not paying as close attention to Venezuela as we did to Greece. But they have a big impact on the countries around them, and that will have an impact on us.
And this is one of those things. There's a lot of Venezuelan bonds held in hedge funds, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of Puerto Rican bonds held in hedge funds.
Right. And if Venezuela hadn't made the bond payment, they had collateral on their bonds because nobody trusted them with their tax revenue. So collateral was required for any national bonds, and the collateral in this case was Citgo, the big company. By the way, most people that buy gas from Citgo have no idea that they're buying directly from Venezuela. That's something that cracks me up every time, that they've got a head of the country that thinks that we are evil, but the vast majority of their money comes from us.
Yeah, there are things that are brewing south and east of us that would be scary, except for the fact that we have a stable system that seems to be able to handle it.
Right.
Puerto Rico continues to be an ongoing issue, but
that's south and east of us. That's for sure.
Yes, yeah. And very frankly, Puerto Rico is broke, can't pay its debt back, and I still don't know what the solution is going to be to that.
I know what I would propose. We've just got a few moments left.
Sell the country.
No, absolutely not. The opposite. I would propose doing a Marshall Plan. If there's a definition of buy when the market's down, it's now, because this is a well-educated American citizen population that has in the past been able to produce some extremely high-skilled people. I would say do the Marshall Plan and let's invest in Puerto Rico and make it a booming center. There's going to be absolutely no way that will happen. There's no political support for it. But that's what you're supposed to do in situations like this.
I actually think their problem is that they have chosen to remain neither fish nor fowl. If they had chosen to become a state, then the federal government would be in a position to bail them out.
Right. Well, they're in a position now to bail them out, but
where they would need to bail them out.
Right. I would say if I were, we're about out of time. If I had, billions of dollars sitting around, and if I was Warren Buffett, I'd be buying into the infrastructure of Puerto Rico right now because it's cheap.
No question about that. It's also broken.
And we're out of time. If you'd like to contact us off the air, the local number is 947-1111. You can reach that number toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.